Hey, what's going on? This is Aaron Luttrell, and you are tuning in to Real Talk Real Estate featuring Aaron Luttrell. And unfortunately, Greg couldn't be here in person, but Greg's big head, now available to be seen on Instagram, is going to be live with me here this evening. So he'll be extra quiet tonight. We'll not be talking nearly as much as he normally does. But I figured since he can't be here in person, we might as well get him in on the video in some way, somehow. So if you haven't seen this before, Greg's Big Head is a new thing that we're going to start doing. He's going to start posting some photos around town, let you know different places where that might be, and give you some opportunities to try to guess where he's at and what's going on. Since I am flying solo tonight, I'm going to be doing a couple different things. You might see me looking off to the side and stuff like that, so I apologize. I'm just trying to pay attention to everything that's going on. So I want to continue the conversation about the HGTV effect tonight. Last time we talked, we were talking specifically on the effect that HGTV has had on people's expectations of what they can get into on home renovation projects. Now, there's a whole lot of misconceptions about home renovations out there, so we really dove into that quite a bit on our last episode. So if you haven't checked it out yet, make sure you go back to the playlist of all of the Real Talk Real Estate episodes and kind of see what we were talking about when it pertains to the renovation process. This week, I'm going to be talking about the HGTV effect on buyers' expectations for writing an offer, mainly because of the things that they see on shows like Property Brothers, or, you know, sometimes you see on House Hunters or things of that nature, where every time somebody's ready to put an offer in on a property, they sit down with their agent with a glass of coffee or the cup of coffee or a glass of wine. Everybody's super excited, but you'll notice there's no paperwork anywhere. Most of the time they're just talking about the price they want to offer, and their big thing is, hey, it's going to be X number of dollars for the price. The agent goes, great, let me see what I can do for you. They show them outside, pacing around on their cell phone, talking to the agent on the other side, and voila, they get an offer accepted or countered or something else happens. Guess what? As is the case with all other HGTV things, totally not real. In the state of Indiana, there's actually an 8-page document that we go through on every single offer to make it a valid offer that we are submitting to a listing agent to give to a seller on a property. Now, not only is it 8 pages, that document outlines every single detail from the day the offer is made to the day you move into that home and every single thing that happens in between. There are actually 27 sections of that document that I go through with every single buyer that I sit down with every single time that we write an offer. 27 sections. Seriously, there's that many details that have to go into that. So I made a list, kind of broke it down to the additional things you kind of need to know when you're making an offer. But ultimately, there's like 20 things that you kind of have to go through. Not just things that you want to be aware of, but things that you're actually going to negotiate and things that you're going to have to talk about and figure out before you actually get into that property. So tonight I'm going to give you a really quick rundown, give a brief explanation of what those different things are so that if you're thinking about making a purchase, whether it's your first home or it's been a while since you bought a home, this is good information to have so you know what you're getting yourself into before you sit down and make the offer on that property. First thing you got to do whenever you're thinking about putting in an offer is identify the parties involved and the property that's being sold. Seems simple enough, right? Well, address isn't necessarily the easiest thing to identify. Actually just sold a property earlier this year that according to the property card at the county level was 191 Roosevelt Drive. Unfortunately, the truth is it was actually 191 Roosevelt Avenue. Luckily, we had a correct legal description. We were able to get everything figured out, but there were some amendments that had to go into place to make sure that we actually had the right property that we were selling. The other thing that you need to know is whether or not there are additional parcels that are being sold. Just wrote an offer recently on a piece of property that actually sat on 2 separate parcels, so we had to make sure that we were including both of those in the purchase price and the offer that we were including. So a little bit more detail goes into what's actually being sold. Second thing is what items are included or not included in the property. Sometimes you may have some things that are at the house that you want to ask the seller to leave. Could be some personal property like appliances, could be something that's like shelves that are outside in a garage or a pole barn that may not be permanently attached. You want to make sure you get that stuff in writing because if it's not on the purchase agreement or agreed to in writing by the parties in Indiana, whether it's on a data sheet or a seller's disclosure or anything else, if it's not in writing, the seller doesn't have to leave it. So make sure you detail exactly what's going with the property. In addition to that, you're going to come up with a price. The big thing, the one thing that always is the hardest thing for a lot of people to come up with. The price is what you're going to pay for the property that's being transferred. ultimately, if you're getting any type of financing or anything like that, that price is also going to have to come up in the appraisal value. So if the property doesn't appraise for the price that you're offering, we can get into that in another episode. I think we've talked about it before. There's some other options of things that have to go in. But that price is set from day one when you make that offer and says, this is what I'm willing to pay you for the property. Once you get through the price, you start talking about earnest money. Now, earnest money is one of those things that is a little bit misunderstood. It's not required in our state. It's not required with any offer, but it really shows your intentionality as a buyer to purchase that property. There is no required amount to be paid with earnest money, but this section allows us to tell you how much you're willing to put up as your good faith money, which ultimately goes towards your down payment whenever you get to the closing table. There's some additional details in there. I don't want to go too in-depth, but ultimately you need to know exactly how much earnest money you're putting down and understand that that's going to be a fee that you're paying out of pocket up front when you first make that offer. After you get the earnest money figured out, it goes through all the terms of default. If you don't go through with the contract, it explains exactly what's going to happen with your earnest money and other legal remedies and actions that the seller can take if you breach that contract. Really important part of the contract. I always make sure that everybody knows exactly what could happen. Best case scenario, everybody closes the deal, everyone's happy. That's ultimately what our goal is. So I'm going to try to keep a client protected. Whether it's a seller or the buyer, anytime we're entering into contract, my goal is to get it closed. However, I want everyone to know what the worst case scenario options are going to be, because ultimately, if you don't know, you're not informed, there could be some consequences that you don't see coming. After you get through the default, you're going to get into the terms of financing. That's right. Terms of financing are spelled out in the purchase agreement. Second page, one of the biggest things that are on there is going to ask, what kind of loan are you getting? Whether it's a conventional, insured conventional, are you paying cash? Are you getting a VA or FHA loan? Or in some areas, you can get a USDA loan. All of these things have an impact on what the seller might be willing to negotiate, because some of these different types of financing are going to have different terms that the seller is going to have to agree to, whether that's inspection items, whether that's chipping and peeling paint, or certain things that come up with these different types of financing. They want to know what you're looking at, because that's going to impact the way they negotiate repairs and other things down the road. Not only that, especially in today's market, there's opportunities where there may be multiple offers on a property. Sometimes price is not the only thing that gets the job done. The terms of the financing are definitely aspects that the seller's taking a look at before they make any decision on what offer they're willing to take. After you get through the terms of financing, surprise, surprise, closing costs. How are those being handled? Now, closing costs is kind of a misunderstood thing as well. A lot of buyers think the seller always pays their closing costs. Truth of the matter is it is a point of negotiation on every single offer. So you need to talk to your real estate agent to find out what's customary, what to expect, and how you should properly handle closing costs before you start making an offer and just expecting the seller to pay those. After you get through the closing costs, you're going into the closing date. How long is it going to take you to get the actual transaction closed? Typically in our area, we're looking about 30 to 45 days. It's going to let you get plenty of time to go through all the contingencies and everything else, which I'll kind of outline here in a second. But that's about the time frame that you should be expecting to get through a closing. After that, there's another section under there that asks whether or not the closing is contingent upon the sale of another property. There's three different options there. First one is that it is not contingent at all. I don't have a house to sell. I'm ready to buy this property right now. No problems. That's the number one thing. Second is this is contingent upon the pending sale of another property. It means you're already under contract. That sale's going forward. You know everything's looking good. It asks what the scheduled close date is and lets you know that, hey, I'm already under contract. We should be good to go. There's no other issues that are coming up. We just got to close this thing to get our money for the down payment. Third option is it is contingent upon a sale of another property, which gives you two different options at that point in time. A simple versus a limited contingency, or a simple versus a first right contingency. The limited contingency is going to say, hey, I don't have my house on the market. It's not necessarily ready to go. If you get another offer, you feel free to negotiate that and sell it before I have a chance to go. The first right has a little bit more complication to it. The buyer then has the opportunity, if another offer comes in, to say, wait a minute, I don't want that other person to get that offer. I'm able to purchase the property without selling my home first, so I'll go ahead and make that jump and I'll go ahead and buy it right now. So that's a couple of different things that go in there. After you get through the different contingencies on that, you start talking about the transfer of possession. Now, I deal with a lot of buyers that relocate here from other areas, and this one kind of stumps them a little bit. In our area, it's typical for a seller to hold possession of a property for 30 days after closing. Seems normal for us. That's what everybody does. But the truth of the matter is there's a lot of other areas in the state and especially around the country that they do immediate possession at the closing. The fact is once you close on the property, the buyer actually owns the home at that time. So this is something that you definitely need to work out because it's going to say how long the seller gets to retain possession after closing, who's going to maintain the property, how they're going to maintain the property, what happens if there's some kind of insurance claim, what do we do with the utilities? All that stuff's outlined right there on the purchase agreement from the first day you write the offer. After you get through that, you're looking at the survey contingencies. Do you need a survey on the property? Is it an abnormal piece of property? Is it a super large piece of property? Does it look like there's any kind of encroachments? This will let you know, hey, I definitely want to get a survey done. I want to know who's paying for it. I want to know what type of survey it is. There's multiple different types. This is a good section to get all that stuff lined out. After you get through that, there's the flood area contingencies. If you're in a flood zone and you're getting a loan on the property, the bank is going to find out and they're going to say, hey, we want you to have flood insurance on this property. No questions asked. We want to make sure our asset is protected. We want to make sure that the liability is mitigated as much as possible. You have to have that requirement. Flood insurance can become quite costly, so this is a good contingency to throw in there that says, hey, if it does come up and I was unaware, I have the opportunity to cancel the contract at that point in time. After that, you're looking at insurance and inspection contingencies, the period of time that you have to actually get a favorable written commitment for your homeowner's insurance, the time period to have your inspections, how much time do you have to respond to your inspections after you get the property inspected, what happens if they find mold, what happens if there's radon gas, what do I do if I need to get an additional contractor in there to look at some other things because there were certain items that were kind of questionable. All of these are things that are in that contract that you line out with your agent up front to make sure you know what's going to happen and gives you options to take care of things when something unexpected comes up. So those are great things to have figured out on the front end. After you get through all of that, hey, is there a home warranty that's being included? If the seller's not already included in one, do I want to purchase one? Do I want to ask the seller to include one? That's another option that you can go through on the purchase agreement right up front. What are the required disclosures in the state of Indiana? There's a couple different disclosures you might run into. You might get the residential seller's disclosure. You might get the lead-based paint disclosure. What situations arise when those may not be necessary? These are things that not everyone's going to know on the front end, but they're things that you have to get figured out and things that your agent's going to be able to walk you through and explain to you when you're making the offer on the property. After you get through the required disclosures, there's title insurance charges. This is another thing that comes up that people don't really know. There's two different types of insurance policies for title insurance. There's an owner's policy and there's a lender's policy. Who's going to pay for those? How much information do they actually need to go on? Am I required to have an owner's policy? These are things and questions that come up every single time I write an offer. You never see on HGTV. They never discuss. They never let you know that these things are going on, but they're absolutely vital parts of every contract that we write. After you get through the title insurance contingencies, you've got real estate taxes. What if there's special assessments? Is there a homeowners association? Are there documents that say there are certain things that I can and can't do with my property? What kind of info do I need to know before I move into this house? All things that are often overlooked because, hey, when you're working with the property brothers, you just need a price and a cell phone, and we can get that figured out for you. In the real world, you want to know these things because there could be certain things that come up at different times that could completely blindside you. You may find out, hey, you're not allowed to park your car out on the street. What if that's a big problem because you have so many vehicles, you don't have space to park them all in the garage or in the driveway? These are things that you're going to need to know and be able to actually actively look up before you sign off and close on a property. After you get all of that kind of stuff worked out, you've got all your contingencies lined out, you've got your disclosures figured out, you know who's paying for what, you know the price, everything else is good to go on that offer. Guess what? You get to set the expiration time. That's right. When you make an offer on a property, you get to tell the seller how quickly you want them to respond. Here's the thing. You got to give them some time. You got to be reasonable in your request for them to get a response back to you. But in a limited inventory market like we've been dealing in, I've seen buyers who come in and they're like, you know what? I want to get an answer as quickly as possible because I want to make sure nobody else gets in there and gets this taken away from me. Talk to your agent. Figure out the best way to negotiate that to get that taken care of on the front end so you know exactly what you're getting into. After you get through all of that, the final section on the purchase agreement is what's known as the seller's response. Guess what? That seller has three different options for a response once they get to that part of the contract. They can accept your offer, they can reject your offer, or they can counter your offer. And when they counter your offer, technically that's a rejection of the terms that you've offered them, and they're gonna say, here's what we will accept if you're willing to do so and give that back to you. Once they do that counter offer, guess what? All bets are off. You can start renegotiating any term of that contract at that point in time. Generally, what we're looking at is typically going to be specific things like price, or maybe it's closing costs or taxes or things of that nature. But there are those 26 other items that you still have to negotiate if they give you a counter offer. So, unlike what you see on TV, the truth is it's not as easy as going back and forth and saying, hey, here's the price. Yes, we'll take it. We're good to go. There's a whole lot more stuff that goes into getting your purchase agreement written and hopefully accepted. If you have any questions on exactly what goes into writing an offer that I didn't cover here in depth, feel free to let me know down in the comments below. Unlike HGTV, we are here to answer all your questions, not just discuss the price for you. So feel free to hit up the Aaron Advantage team. You can give Aaron a call. That's me, 812-779-6273. Or if you know Greg's big head over here, you can give him a shout at 812-454-8103. We're here to take care of you no matter what you need for any real estate need you might have. Let me know in the comments any additional questions you might have or other topics you want to discuss here on Real Talk Real Estate, and we will get back to you next week. Hope you're having a fantastic Monday and your week is off to a great start. Have a good one.